not subject to civil compromise.
We've got four left here. Assault.
And Madam Chair, assault three should be added. It is compromisable, and presumably if you didn't want to allow a compromise of assault four, you wouldn't want to allow a compromise of assault three.
Okay, well, let's put it in. We need to add that to the dash two amendments, is that right?
Yes.
In line 13. Yeah, we don't have to worry about where.
How would you do, would we leave it up to legislative council to add assault three that was not picked up on the House side, that is now currently compromisable?
And
is that right?
Yes, Madam Chair. At the public hearing, I did provide members with the definitions of these other offenses, and I don't know if committee members don't have it, I can provide that too, on reckless endangering and harassment.
Yeah, they were negotiating with Senator Shoemaker, and they decided that deferred prosecution was not a... So...
Are they going to look at that in the end?
I suppose we could, yeah, with the whole domestic violence issue, but for the moment, I think we ought to try to do as much as do what we have here. Okay. We have the A2 plus the addition of assault 3. Anyone interested in moving these things? Okay. Chair would move the A2 amendments with the addition of assault 3. Are there objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay. And the chair would move House Bill 3051 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman? Senator Bund?
No.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
Aye.
Senator Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill? Chair Cohen?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay.
Madam Chair, could I be recorded as a yes?
Yes. Senator Hill would like to be recorded as a yes for House Bill 3051.
Thank you.
You want to be recorded as a yes on House Bill 2586, too?
I voted on that one.
Oh, okay. Excuse me, I can't even tell anymore. Let's take up 3222, get at least through the first page here, and then we'll go to our sex offense bills. Right. This is the settlement, confidential settlement of public actions, tort claims, specific tort claims, if I recall. Time to go home. My every single pen I have here is gone dry. Okay, Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a bill that was last before us on the 6th of June. It was you have before you an engrossed version plus a set of amendments, and the amendments are proposed by the proponents of the bill with one minor change, and that was done by me. And on line two of the amendments, it says of a private individual. So the bill reads, the specific privacy interests of a private individual outweigh the public's interest in terms of settlement of a compromise. And that was just to make sure that it applied to individuals, not to persons, which may be broader than individuals, but persons, individuals having a privacy interest in persons, including corporations, not necessarily so having it.
Is So as it stands now, who would be, what kinds of settlements would be, you could actually keep a private, a settlement closed of a private person?
Of an individual, as opposed to a private.
Okay. As I recall, delete lines 12 through 14. I don't have a hand in growth. Excuse me. Good.
Madam Chair, I'd move the amendments if you're ready for that motion.
Sure. I think we've... So we're somehow hampered. Some people, like Senator Shoemaker, may have had to be gone. You know, some people have missed hearings on this bill. It was an evening hearing, and I don't
know. I recall Rep. St. Parks, and I think we had some folks from ONPA.
Right.
And I had marked my original bill in the same manner as the amendment, so apparently
it
was...
So that was offered. I thought it was agreed on then, too. Senator Springer has moved the A5 amendments. Are there objections to that? Hearing none, so ordered.
Okay. Move the bill as amended, do pass.
Senator Springer moves House Bill 3222 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman. Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay, let's do a little, not quite wiretapping, fancy tracking. House Bill 3299 has been amended. Okay, Ingrid.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the 1989 legislature passed a law permitting mobile tracking units to be used with respect to certain offenses, in particular murder, kidnapping, arson, robbery, other crimes dangerous to life, bribery, and extortion. The sponsors are seeking to extend the use of these mobile tracking devices, which may be used only with the authorization of a warrant, to the offenses of burglary and unauthorized use of a motor vehicle. The amendment deletes theft, which was included in the original bill.
It's all grown a long way. This,
that's too broad. One question while we're pondering this. I see this as present law, but for my own information, what is any crime?
This is that
crime?
Famous present law that we did that the last session.
I do remember. What is any crime punishable as a felony arising under ORS 475.992?
Drugs.
It's drugs.
Drugs, thank you.
Drugs.
You're moving the bill without the amendments? Or are you moving the amendments?
We don't have any amendments, do we?
We have amendments, A2.
Oh, here we are.
Delete
that. Sorry.
Can someone explain?
Narrow it a little bit.
I've moved the A2 amendments.
Pretty.
Okay, Senator Bunn has moved the A2 amendments. Are there objections to that motion? Hearing none, so forth. That was our effort to at least make sure that we weren't sort of spending police time tracking down PGE's bathroom, metal bathroom fixtures or something of that.
Leather cuts from Nordstrom's, yeah.
Madam Chair, does anyone recall the need for bribery? Did we have testimony?
Well, The bribery is not new.
It is interesting.
Well, we want to...
Yeah, it's...
No, I know it's not new. I guess I'm questioning your action of last session.
Well, you could go a long way to question our actions of last session.
Move the bill.
Yes, Senator Budd has moved House Bill 3299 as we have amended it, which will in fact pick up automobile theft and burglary.
Good deal.
And with the, and reminding yourselves that they still have to get a warrant for this.
Oh, I remember that bill.
Not very reassuring to few of my folks here. Okay.
Anticipated to do so.
Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman?
Aye.
Senator Bunn?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker?
Aye.
Senator Springer?
No.
Vice Chair Hill?
Aye.
Chair Cullen?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you.
Although I'm glad to see Clory introducing bills for the city of Portland. That makes me feel pretty good.
Okay, now, actually, let us hear from the Department of Justice on 2193. We didn't really have the appropriate testimony last time to tell us why they needed to have access to inmate medical records.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Van Valkenburg. I'm with the Department of Justice, and I'm here to testify on House Bill 2193. I presented a summary of written testimony that your aide is handing out right now. I won't reiterate every point. The major points is that this bill would clarify the existing statute to provide for confidentiality of patient and inmate medical records, clarify those statutes to, for the most part, codify the general rule which exists out there in the private sector as to the access of legal counsel to their clients' records. The bill does add some special procedural protections for the mental health side and for those clients because of the special concerns that the mentally ill have. There are some housekeeping amendments which were inadvertently not taken care of on the House side. I provided a copy of the markup bill to Ms. Swenson, counsel, and I can discuss that at some later point. Generally speaking, if these statutes are narrowly construed in their current state, the Attorney General's Office and the Risk Management Division are prohibited from reviewing their own clients' records concerning legal actions which are brought by patients or inmates. The AG's office, the Risk Management Division, need access to those records in a timely fashion. The current statutes do not serve any useful purpose if they are construed that narrowly. There's no reason to require particular onerous procedures to take place with respect to gaining access, and this bill would attempt to provide that access as needed. I can answer any questions that you wish. One point I'd raise is this committee has before it the habeas corpus reform bill the Chief Justice has supported from the Supreme Court, as well as Mr. Frommeyer. That bill would specifically allow motions for summary judgment to be brought pretrial in habeas corpus cases. If this committee and this body intends to pass that legislation out, it's meaningless without legal counsel in the AG's office having access to those records prior to a trial, and this would help facilitate that. Other than that, I can answer any questions you may have on specific provisions.
Yes, Ingrid, please.
Madam Chair, Jeff, There are basically two subsections here, one which deals with Department of Corrections inmates and one which deals with clients of the Mental Health Division. And you make quite different provisions for the release of those records. Inmates need not be requested to consent to the release. nor need there be any restriction relating to relevancy as there is for clients. Is there a reason that these two groups of individuals are being treated differently?
Madam Chair, Council, in fact, there really is very little distinction between how they will be treated. Subsection B, under on page 3 of the bill, relates to disclosure in an action or suit that's been filed, and it's redundant. In essence, it recites that the evidence code in the contested case procedures under the APA will apply. They apply whether or not it's in the bill or not. This portion of the bill provision was added at the request of patient advocacy groups, and we had no objection to it. So that's why that provision is there. The relevancy requirements in any state habeas corpus action, civil rights action brought by an inmate will still be applicable in court, and we just deemed it unnecessary. Secondly, it was the concern or thought of the bill sponsors and our department that the state has a different relationship with those committed to its care for criminal activity than it does to those who are non-compos mentis on the mental health side of the issue. And as a result of that, we believe we have an arm's length relationship with inmates. They're sophisticated enough. They file hundreds of suits. They understand that if they file a suit challenging the adequacy of the medical care provided them, that those records are going to be necessary to determine the facts in the case. And so we didn't think it was necessary to add those restrictions. If this committee, for whatever reason, feels that that's necessary, we can live with that, but we don't believe that it is. I might also point out it's important that the AG's office have an opportunity to review records with their clients to determine what is relevant. If you read these statutes as they currently exist very strictly, we wouldn't even have that capability. And those are the major reasons why we didn't separate the two client groups.
Okay, other questions?
Well, I'm not sure I'm convinced that the state's got a problem now. Maybe it does, but you know, somebody's incarcerated, and probably not for stealing caps, but their choice in terms of medical care is substantially restricted. I don't know if they've got enough funds that they can retain a physician to come inside and treat them, but in a practical sense, that's not going to happen. So they're restricted to a standard of care that may be different from what you or I might choose if we were not, obviously, not incarcerated. And now we're going to limit their rights and create another category in terms of the kind of protection we have for other litigants. I just don't feel very comfortable with that.
Madam Chair, Senator Springer, if I could address that. What I don't think you understand, Senator Springer, is that this does nothing but codify the existing rule that we have out in the private sector. Private health care providers have access to their legal counsel. Legal counsel can review those records. All we're asking for is the same sort of access that private counsel would have with Salem Hospital or any other care provider out there in the private sector. Your records would be treated the same way as the inmates' records would be out in the private sector. That's all we're asking for.
Okay, so basically, in the correction side, you're looking for defense information.
Madam Chair, defense information as well as early access to information for the Risk Management Division to perform their statutory function to evaluate claims. I think in their prepared testimony, they indicated some numbers of suits that they settle. And the trial division attorneys in the Department of Justice, working with the Risk Management Division, resolve many cases prior to a trial. This kind of access is necessary to help facilitate that.
Senator Hill.
Could you, in some cases that you've handled, could you just kind of give us some idea of the actual difficulties that you've encountered?
Senator Hill, Madam Chair, I had one case couple of years ago when I was handling the hundreds of habeas corpus cases that I had on my docket at the time, where an inmate has challenged his ability to receive an HIV test. And under Oregon administrative rules, the Department of Corrections, following Health Division rules, required that that inmate receive some pretest counseling. The inmate did not plead any concern about access, AG access to those records, yet he raised it in the habeas corpus proceeding. It took a long time for me as counsel for the department to resolve that issue. It was resolved. The court found that that was not an issue which was pertinent to a habeas corpus action and let that go. The Department of Justice has been sued a couple times as a result of a narrow construction of these statutes. I can't tell you the results. One was a notice of suit, and it was resolved without the filing of an actual complaint. I believe there have been some settlements on the mental health side with the Oregon Advocacy Center along this issue. I'd like to point out to the committee that, at least on the mental health side, that several of these additional protections were added at their request, and that they support this bill as currently constructed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's hear from Dennis Dowd, since last time we heard we had a very abbreviated comment period where we just had one person from the risk pool came in support of the bill. I think it was on Memorial Day evening or something like that. So I think we need to hear. We will cogitate a bit on this bill. Dennis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, since I noticed I didn't put it on the written testimony I submitted, my name's Dennis Dowd. I'm Assistant Director for the Institution Branch of the Department of Corrections. The Department of Corrections was the original. We requested this bill originally and submitted it. It was originally intended to allow the staff of the Department of Justice and the Assistant Attorney Generals that represented us in court to have access to inmate records, medical records, in pursuit of the defense of suits brought by inmates against the Oregon Department of Corrections. And later it was expanded through amendments not introduced by the Department of Corrections to allow the state insurance agencies, and it also affected then the Department of the Division of Mental Health. The Department of Corrections continues to support the bill as amended, mainly because it would reduce the amount of time and therefore the amount of work that the Department of Justice representatives will have to do in defending the Department of Corrections against inmate lawsuits and allowing investigation of claims brought against the department by inmates and sometimes by staff. That was the basis for our initial request, and we continue to support the bill.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Eva Kudis, who's the patient advocate for the Mental Health and Developmental Disability Services Division, could offer some brief comments on the patient side on why these provisions are necessary.
I just wanted to add a comment again. Eva Kutosh from the Client Rights Office. Our office is responsible for investigating abuse in the state training centers and fairly shortly the mental hospitals as well. And our experience at Fairview Training Center and at Eastern Oregon Training Center have been that we will have certain amount of evidence in terms of physical or testimonial from people that we've interviewed that might have been working a shift. And we are very often not able to use the medical records of the patient or resident themselves because they can't consent to their use. And so we may have, in my memory, I can recall a person who, if we had been able to use the records, we could have substantiated the abuse because there was falsification of the record that would have shown that he later made an entry to try to explain the injury to a client. But because we couldn't use the record, we weren't able to take that to the arbitration, and he was successful in winning that case. So in terms of our work in trying to substantiate abuse or actually to prove that it didn't occur, it may sometimes be a benefit to the staff member to show that they weren't responsible. It would be of use to us to be able to have access to the patient records without their consent on some occasions.
Okay. Are there questions of any of these witnesses? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. 3317.
Any opposition to this? We're moving on. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're moving over that one. We have not heard any opposition to an opposition.
Has ACLU been heard from?
Yeah, we haven't asked. Ingrid. 3317. Thank you.
Madam Chair, this bill was before the committee on Friday of last week, and basically, this is a bill that would permit the disclosure of certain juvenile court record information and CSD information when a child had threatened some kind of imminent harm to an individual or to society, and the committee had discussed certain changes. There are A6 amendments, and I'm sorry you don't have an engrossed version of the bill, but basically what those would do would be to require that the person providing this information be either a juvenile caseworker, a detention worker, or a CSD worker, so that it's clear that only those individuals are authorized to provide confidential information from juvenile files. The language imminent danger would be replaced with clear and immediate danger to bring it into conformity with other statutes. It would be a mandatory requirement rather than a permissive one, so the word may would be changed to shall. And that is pretty much the content of those amendments. A5 amendments were distributed at the time of the public hearing at the request of the proponent, and that would have foreclosed liability on the part of any person reporting or choosing not to disclose. And the A5 amendment would have protected against liability for non-disclosure.
Okay. Given the fact that you said you shall, do we need the or chooses not to disclose at that point? We do. We still do that. I recall the discussion with.
We never did need that.
Yes.
We had a sort of a.
We have a little stand up here. Okay. Senator Springer.
Well, the liability is kind of tripping me up here. I'm sure that comes as no surprise, but. When we say on page 2 that an agency or a person who discloses information shall have immunity from any liability that might otherwise incurred or be imposed, that liability might not have nothing to do with the disclosure whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree with you.
If I'm reading it, I think it could be interpreted that way.
It might. Otherwise, then if.
Well, I would say we need to. I'd like to get your ideas and then back and bring it back again if we're going to do this. So let's churn around a little bit more on it and see where the committee is and figure out. Senator Springer, why don't you continue there?
Well, I'm just kind of hanging up on what the problem is and what the intent of that provision is. I'm not very keen on these immunity provisions. I think that's a known fact.
I clearly think we'd want to relate it to the specific action of disclosure or non-disclosure at a minimum there. Senator Bunn.
Madam Chair, are these provisions on page 2, line 12, just dealing with juvenile workers that would not apply to, for example, a public school teacher or counselor?
With the amendments, A6 amendments, which came through the committee discussion, we are limiting it.
Okay, I understand they would limit it, but the original bill was not limited. Is that correct? So that under the original bill, a school teacher who had a student say something under the original bill would have been able to warn the person but as amended, we're not dealing with that issue.
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, the bill doesn't deal with that. It deals with juvenile court records, so a teacher would not have access.
Is a teacher at McLaren a juvenile caseworker then, or a detention worker?
That's a good question. I can't, I'm not sure I know.
Okay. Madam Chair, I don't think we need the narrow definition in the A6 amendments. I think they may prove harmful. I think we need the shall, and we need to clear up the liability, but I don't think we need to, we don't need such a narrow definition that it only covers two people, and anybody who falls outside of that is denied the protection or responsibility of the bill.
Okay. Then you are also, I want to double check and make sure that you're not inclined to deal with the A5 then, personally, Senator Bunn.
No, I think that someone who uses poor judgment and chooses not to.
Woman who testified saying she thought it was important to be in the courtroom to get that sense of support and verification or so that she could get clear understanding that she had been in court. Vindication is the real word for it. So these are the amendments. Chris, you want to come forward and speak to them if you have any concerns? Came to some degree.
My name is Chris Gardner. I'm from the ODAA. Thank you. I have no objection to any of the amendments. Ingrid and I also discussed the age being raised to under 13. I have no objection to your reconsidering that either if that's an issue before you. I would like to comment just real briefly on the amendment to the videotape testimony part. It has a list of people, as the statute currently exists, that says only the judge, attorneys for the parties, and I'll skip the rest of it to get to the relevant part, may be present during the child's testimony. It does not require that any of those people be present, and it appears to leave that at the discretion of the judge. So I don't see where the change that was done by the House would change existing law, and it would, I think there's an interpretation of how this is currently written that would allow a judge to exclude a party, a defendant, say, and bring that case before the Oregon Supreme Court. So, and I have no problem with any of the amendments.
Okay, great. So, I guess, are there objections to the A4
amendments?
Senator Hanby moves the A4 amendments. Are there objections here in Council? Senator Shoemaker?
A couple of questions. I noticed that on line 35 and page 4, the reference back to section 18A is still dealing with children under 10 years of age, mm-hmm. whereas for at least some purposes, we changed the age to 13. I want to be sure that that wasn't inadvertent.
I guess
there still is a distinction.
I think there is an open question about whether we want to bring it up to that large of an age, given some of the testimony that we had from victims here. Who felt it was important that they, for their own purposes, come forward and be present and be vindicated by the court, if you will, and that it was a good response for them at that, whatever. And I guess that you may hear different ages of victims or different victims with different experiences, but we, in response to what we said, what we heard in this committee as victims testifying, there is some usefulness from their standpoint.
Senator Cohen, if I may comment just briefly, it is often a cathartic experience that's very positive, particularly if it's done in tandem with work with therapists and stuff to come to court, confront mm-hmm. your abuser, and testify. But if you'll look at the grounds for unavailability that trigger either 18B or 24, you would find that under none of those situations would it be conceivable that it would be a positive cathartic event. One would be you were frightened to testify, you had a loss of memory, you were unavailable for some reason. So in those situations, I don't think that's a problem. If we look at why a person would be unavailable and would trigger the use of these statutes.
Okay.
Another question.
Did you talk about the 10-year-old versus the 13-year-old as the bill stands right now? In fact, you didn't really get an answer to Senator Shoemaker's question, I think.
On the age issue?
Yeah.
I recommend it under 12 to make it consistent with the A felony statutes. There's enough different ages I have to remember. I'd like to have it plug into an existing age. This is a new one. I don't know if any statute that defines under 13 as a relevant age.
Should we do 12?
So moved. That's fine.
That's reasonable.
Yes.
Mine was just a technical amendment. If we do 12 or 13, do we also do it on line 35 and page 4? And I simply don't know the answer. I just noticed that there's an inconsistency there.
Nationally, as bills like this have been enacted, they've been enacted to serve exactly the same purpose, so I don't see any logical distinction having different age for one than the other.
Would the committee object to using 12 years old throughout the bill? Senator Hill's moved that age. Are there objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay, I think, Chris, anything else?
Just on 18A, the at-issue language, frequently in a particularly in a criminal prosecution, there may be other acts of sexual misconduct at issue than the one charged.
Right.
But it's whatever would be available under current law to be put at issue in any particular proceeding.
So I think it's fine. Okay. Chair. Thank you. Senator Shoemaker.
I also, in an earlier hearing, I had a question regarding the extension of these privileges to civil proceedings as well as criminal and juvenile proceedings. And I see that the amendments don't deal with that question.
That's right. That's sort of the guts of the bill, I guess, they would say.
Okay.
Right.
I could address those concerns briefly.
Please.
One dilemma that we perceive that we could have, this has come up in Deschutes County within the last year. There was a civil custody proceeding going forward where Deschutes County, as well through as the state of Oregon and the DA's office, had juvenile jurisdiction over the case because the children resided there. We were faced with the potential dilemma, had the child been unable to testify, of having a full custody proceeding take place within which all the available evidence in a juvenile proceeding wouldn't have been admissible, which would have cast back on the county through the DA's office the responsibility of going forward with the juvenile proceeding. It's our feeling that these cases come to court in a lot of different forums and that the same evidence should be available in every forum so that if they're litigated fully and completely in one forum, there's not an imperative to take it forward and relitigate it in a different forum.
Seems in a suit for damages is a little different from custody to allow exceptions to the hearsay rule or to aid one party in its quest for money damages doesn't seem quite as compelling to me as it does in other situations.
My expertise as to Oregon civil law is minimal, so I'd prefer not to comment.
Okay, Senator Bond moves Possible 2395 as we've amended it. That includes the addition of the year 12 years throughout and the A4 amendment. Further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman. Senator Bond.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
No.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Let's move to 2411. We've got witnesses here with amendments. Wilson, is her name?
Yes. Oh, 2411. That's the
statute of limitations. Oh, okay, excuse me. 2411, we'll just go ahead and do that. it's a statute of limitation, criminal, right?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, this was last before the committee on May 20th. This would extend the statute of limitations for certain felony and misdemeanor sex offenses. For felony offenses, a prosecution could be brought up to 6 years after the commission of the offense by an adult or a juvenile. If the offense occurred when the victim was a juvenile, it could be brought up to the time that the juvenile was 24. In other words, up to 6 years after the time the juvenile reached the age of 18. For misdemeanors, the statute of limitations would be extended to 4 years or until the victim was 22 years old if the victim was under 18 at the time of the offense. The offenses are listed in the bill, which are covered, but the felony sex offenses are basically inclusive of all sex offenses and the misdemeanors as well. Senator Shoemaker, at the time of the last hearing, had inquired what the practice in other states was with respect to statute of limitations in these cases, and I have provided two members a summary which was provided to us. It was prepared by the American Prosecutors Research Institute, and it sets forth the statute of limitations in certain sex offenses in other jurisdictions. And in four of the jurisdictions which have statutes similar to what this bill would do, they make another provision for circumstances where the victim reports the incident to police, so that the statute would begin to run either when the victim turned 18, the six-year statute, or when the victim reported that incident to the police or to an appropriate law enforcement person, whichever occurred sooner. So the amendments, the A2 amendments accomplished that change, but otherwise it is a six-year statute of limitations.
And this is not out of line, apparently, with what, 13 other states, sort of, in terms of what, where they are with it, statute of limitations.
Yes, Madam Chair, if the members wish to review this material, some states have no statute of limitations on sexual offenses, particularly involving children. Others have very specific statutes that apply regardless of the age of the victim. But the most similar ones to this scheme generally did include a provision for the statute beginning to run at the time of the report.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shoemaker.
I notice that the A2 amendments don't, by their words at least, limit the reporting to be by the victim. Should it be limited to the victim, or should it be?
No, I don't know how you could do that.
Okay.
I mean, you get children victims. I don't.
It's the child's cause of action. We're trying to give them a room to do it after they become adults.
This is criminal.
I know.
We've extended
just
the civil statute quite. We just expanded that.
All right. Okay.
Way up to age 40.
Okay.
So we've taken the civil side way to age 40, and we are here with the criminal side.
Madam Chair, would I like a motion on the amendments?
I think so, unless there's objections.
I move that House Bill 2411-A2 amendments.
Okay. Are there objections to those amendments? Hearing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, then I would move House Bill 2411 as amended to floor if it do pass.
Thank you. Senator Hill moves House Bill 2411 to the floor with a do pass recommendation as we've amended it. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman. Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby. Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay, now we have 2412, which is, we do have amendments from the AG's office on that one. That's what I was looking at.
Yes, we do, Madam Chair. Um, Basically, at the time of the public hearing in this on this bill, which requires the court to expedite cases in which a victim is a child or a child is a witness in a case involving a family member, and the bill excluded juvenile cases, the Attorney General's office suggested that termination of parental rights matters should be expedited, even though other juvenile cases were not, and so the amendments would include termination cases among those to be expedited.
Okay, and I guess the Attorney General's office has been in touch with the sponsors of the bill on this issue, I think.
I believe so, Madam Chair, and that was acceptable.
Okay. Anyone want to say anything about this? You want to come up to us? Last name, yes.
For the record, I'm Deborah Wilson from Department of Justice. A lot of Wilsons around here.
Trying to figure out your first
Not
name.
Susan or Kathy, but Debbie right. Wilson. Yeah. And I have been in touch with the sponsors of the bill, and they are supportive of this, great, as well as CSD.
Great. Thank you for preparing it. Okay.
And Madam Chair, I'd move the HB 2412-A2 amendments.
Okay. Senator Hill has moved the A2 amendments to House Bill 2412. Are there objections to that motion? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay. Senator Hill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2412 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hill moves House Bill 2412 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as we have amended it. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman. Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby. Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay. I'm just trying to get, let's go to House Bill 2544. This is the allows prosecution of females for the crime of rape. There are no amendments to that one, I think, right, Ingrid?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
We've had some discussions about trying to move ahead to do gender neutral throughout the sex abuse, through the entire statute. Decided to go ahead and interested parties felt this bill was in order this session, but that during interim there needs to be an effort to move to try to conform gender neutral throughout the statute. Okay. The bill is here without amendment. Anybody want to move this bill?
I'm sure I'd move
Senator Bunn.
Bill.
Okay, Senator Bunn moves House Bill 2544 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman. Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby. Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay. Let's what 2415, Ingrid? What do you have next? I'm looking for anything that you. We've got 10-15 minutes here, and I want to try to get through as many of these before people come.
Madam Chair, this was before the committee on May 20th. This bill basically changes the current offense of sexual penetration with a foreign object to include penetration with body parts. Although the bill specifically excludes the penis, and the amendments in 2415A2 would exclude the mouth so that these do not overlap with sodomy and rape offenses. Other than that, they retain the provisions of current law, except that, of course, with respect to conduct that involves, for example, use digital penetration, that would be elevated in terms of seriousness because currently it would constitute sex abuse, one, and this would make it either a B or A felony rather than a C felony.
Okay, and the victim is under 12, and what else do we have? It goes right down the list, I guess. It applies along the board. That's for the A. Yeah, Class A. Okay.
Madam Chair, there is one minor issue. On page 2 of the bill, section 4, lines 6 and 7, the House added in some amendments to this child abuse statute. It technically does not appear to fit within the relating clause, and I simply wanted to bring that to the committee's attention, that this deals with the statute of limitations in child abuse. The relating clause basically relates to sexual penetration.
Basically, they haven't accomplished very much by it anyway, have they?
No.
It moves from 5.
The current language, yes.
Haven't we amended that anyway? No.
Not, I believe it was made, I think they made it 6 in the House. They wish to change it from 5 to 6.
Do we have a different bill to deal with it, if you wanted to deal with it? Well, whatever. Pleasure of the committee.
Madam Chair, a question. Is 163.412 the exception? Is that dealing with medical workers?
Yeah, we had, actually, Ingrid, we have had a discussion about if you gave your child an EMA at this point, what are you thinking of a classic subject to a Class C felony?
Madam Chair and Senator Bunn, basically the exception says that the penetration is part of a medically recognized treatment or diagnostic procedure or is accomplished by a peace officer or a corrections officer acting in official capacity or by medical personnel at the request of such a person.
Okay.
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 Are we talking specifically now about the relating clause problem?
No, we're just talking about the bill. Actually, we've got an amendment. We have the A2 amendment.
And the Madam Chair, and I would move the A2, HB 241582 amendments.
Okay. Are there objections to adopting the A2 amendments to House Bill 2415? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2415 as amended. The floor could do pass.
Thank you. Senator Hill has moved House Bill 2415 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockley. Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby. Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay, now we come to a decision point. How many people need to go to another committee at 3 or thereafter? 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Who's canceled?
Which is canceled?
GO.
You guys are here. We have a bill. We have the expungement bill, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4 people signed up on that. And the question, I guess, would be whether those folks would want to wait till 7, or we'll hear you now. Why don't we hear you now on House Bill 3449? Ken Chapman is here from Jackson County. And I think most of you would have gotten some communications, whether you recognize it or not, from Mr. Chapman in Jackson County. So we have House Bill 3449. Ingrid, what? No. Let's have Ingrid go through this just a little bit.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, what the A engrossed version of the bill does is add homicides to the offenses which would not be subject to expungement in juvenile cases. Current law provides that certain sex offenses, if they constitute child abuse, are non-expungible. This would add homicides to that group. The bill would also increase the period of time that is required to elapse before a juvenile can seek expungement of the record from 2 years, in some cases in three, in others to 5 years in all cases. And finally, the bill would require that, or specify that the district attorney is entitled to appear on behalf of the state in any juvenile proceeding.
Okay, and we're going to hear some additional amendments that look like they're pretty much reasonable efforts, and you've been working in Jackson County on this. We'd like to hear from you. Thanks.
Madam
Chair, for the record.
My name for the record is Ken Chapman. I'm a juvenile probation officer with Jackson County, and I also appear here as a board member of the Oregon Adolescent Sex Offender Treatment Network. We believe that Senate Bill 3449 at the present time is certainly better than current law, and would want to make it very clear that we'd prefer that to no change in the law at all. We feel it would be important and desirable to consider some significant improvement because the bill as it's written continues to perpetuate problems which actually hinder the vigorous prosecution of adolescent sex offenders. House Bill 3449 also fails to address other seriously violent crime other than homicides and deals with all homicides as if they all involved intent. The expunction law prior to 1989 made it possible for any juvenile record, no matter how serious, to be expunged. It involved whether there was any dismissal. The dismissal covered adult proceedings, but in theory, in fact, no juvenile department I'm aware of made much of an effort to check on pending matters in other states or other jurisdictions. In 1989, the legislature made all sex crimes other than sexual misconduct and indecent exposure non-expungible. The offenses listed in current law are identical to those added to the adult list, which leads to the inevitable conclusion that little thought was given to the particular circumstances of juveniles. For instance, the list includes criminal mistreatment, which covers those who have custody of another. It also covers a great range of offenses that allege sexual intercourse with a person of a certain age range. Certainly a 30-year-old man having sex with a 14-year-old girl represents serious crime. A 17-year-old boy having sex with the same age girl represents crime of a different category. Unfortunately, the current law takes a prudent assumption, which is that adult sex offenses represent habituated behavior, and applies it to all juvenile offenders, which I feel is a highly questionable assumption at best. As a 15-year-old boy who engages in consensual oral sex with a girl 3 years and a day younger than he, always a dangerous offender worthy of an absolutely indelible record. The result of that 1989 law is an example of the law of unintended results. A new law meant to strengthen the public's protection has led a number of juvenile departments to question whether petitions should be filed at all. At recent regional meetings sponsored by the Oregon Adolescent Sex Offender Treatment Network for juvenile probation officers, the main topic of conversation was the problem caused by making all sex crimes by adolescents non-expungible. Some counties have reported filing sex misconduct to avoid the expungement problem or have decided to handle the crimes informally. Both responses are viewed by the treatment network as, at best, inadequate and, at times, irresponsible reactions to serious crime. It is the position of the treatment network that a number of offenses represent such aggressive and violent behavior that the public should be offered the protection of a lifetime record. These would include aggravated murder, manslaughter 1, assault 1, kidnapping 1, rape 1 when the petition alleges forcible compulsion, sodomy 1 when the petition states forcible compulsion,
sexual penetration when the petition alleges forcible compulsion, and robbery. Robbery one. All of these offenses involve intentional acts of the most serious forms of violence. Beyond this list of non-expungible offenses, however, there are a number of other offenses which represent dangerous conduct, but conduct for which there might be sufficiently mitigating circumstances for a juvenile that expungement should at least be considered. It is in considering these gray areas that the present system breaks down totally. Expungement law in Oregon has always been an either-or proposition. Either the subject met the criteria and had a presumptive right to expungement, or the person failed to meet the criteria and was denied expungement. The Treatment Network believes that the following offenses are appropriate to be considered for expungement upon judicial review under some circumstances. Manslaughter 2, criminally negligent homicide, rape in the second degree, rape 1, other than what was previously mentioned, sodomy 2, sodomy 1, other than what was previously mentioned, sexual penetration in the first degree, again, other than what was previously mentioned, sex abuse 1, compelling prostitution, arson 1, and assault 2. To qualify for a hearing to have this record expunged, the person would need at least 4 years since his most recent dismissal. At least 30 days notice would be required for the DA's office, the juvenile department, the victim, and the victim's parents if the victim was a minor at the time of the offense. Persons requiring notice would be considered parties to the hearing and would have a right to present testimony at the hearing. At that hearing, it would be the responsibility of the person who is the subject of the record to provide the court with clear and convincing evidence that expungement would be in the best interests of the person and the public. In making its decision, the court would consider but not be limited to the following: the extent of injury, either physical or emotional, suffered by the victim, the use or threatened use of force during the offense, the number of offenses committed by the person which are subject to discretionary expungement, the premeditated or willful manner in which the offense was committed, the age difference between victim and offender, the person's willingness to accept personal responsibility for his offense, the person's participation in appropriate treatment, the duration of treatment activities, reports and recommendations from those who provided treatment, the person's employment history, and the protection afforded the public by the continued existence of the record. The person under this proposal would be allowed only 2 hearings, which would have to be separated by at least 2 years' time. Other assumptions are that it would apply to all records in existence at the time it became law. There's also the presumption that all records are non-expungible.